Hi, friends. You are about to listen to our series with Dan Butler on his book, Permission to Be Great. Now, during the edits, we realized we did not let you know where you can find information on Dan. So we wanted to do that now. Dan's website is www.danpbutler.com, and he can be found on Twitter at Dan P. Butler. His book can easily be found on Amazon or through Dan's website. Final note, I do apologize for the fact that our audio during this series sounds as though we recorded it in an empty auditorium. We played around with our technology to get three mics going, and I must have missed something somewhere. Enough with that, here is the show. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast, the School Talk podcast, that is. I'm Greg Detmeyer. Sitting across from me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Jenny J. Hill Hillebrand. And this is the podcast where we get together and talk all things school-related. Jenny, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well as well.
So what's new? Like, last podcast, we talked about turkey. You haven't fried any turkeys lately?
No. Well, I mean, behind the curtain, that was like 30 seconds ago that we ended the last podcast, and here we are again. So not much has changed. I thought about using the restroom, but I didn't.
I think you should like just play it out. Like, I need another drink.
Should I act like that? I do not. We do not have a Pepsi machine.
Did you get rid of a Pepsi machine?
Oh, we do have a Pepsi machine. Yes, we do have a Pepsi machine.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe I should go take a nap.
Maybe you can go to the bathroom and I'll get home.
Well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to let you and Dan continue to talk about his new book, Permission to Be Great, while I go take a nap because I can't string together a sentence.
I think you're doing fantastic, Greg. All right. No, hey, doing well. I am super excited. We are on episode 2 of our series, Permission to Be Great, Increasing Engagement in Your School, which is a book that was written by our very own Dan Butler, who is sitting along with us. So Dan joined us for the first episode talking about burnout in education, and he's back with us today to talk about balancing our workload, the control that we have over that, and autonomy. So Dan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, guys. I'm really grateful to be here.
All right, so Dan, last time you spent some time talking about, you know, how you kind of came to write your book. You talked about the problem of burnout in the field of education, and you brought up some of the mismatches that are occurring within the education field. So talk to us a little bit more about the mismatch that you see in education.
Sure. So there's really six of them, and we introduced those in the first episode. But the one that we're going to spend time talking about is the mismatch of workload, control, and autonomy. So basically, when there's a mismatch between the teacher, the educator, and the work environment, the greater that mismatch, the greater the likelihood of burnout. Now, conversely, the greater the match, the greater the connection between the educator and the work environment, the greater the opportunity for engagement. And that's how I view burnout. Is burnout's on one end of the continuum, engagement is on the other end of the continuum. So that just gives the listener a little bit of clarity of what we're kind of talking about in terms of that. But talking about workload, control, and autonomy. So workload, basically, we're talking about how much do I have to do and how much resource do I have to get that done? What are my demands and what resources do I have to meet those demands? Now, that resource could include time. It could include people, whatever that happens to be. But when there's an imbalance there, too much to do, not enough time to do it, if you're working in those conditions for an extended period of time, your likelihood of burnout is much higher. And I know I'm preaching to the choir, educators listening to this podcast. In the last 18 months, 22 months, however long it's been, we are experiencing workload issues beyond belief. And frankly, it's not really sustainable, in my opinion. And we're continuing to plug away, and we're going to continue to do great work and do all that we can, but it's a difficult time. So there's a lot going on with that. But when I think about workload, that's what it is as far as how much do I have to do, how much resources do I have to get it done? And then very quickly, the control and autonomy is a separate mismatch, but really that's how much decision-making authority do I have in my job? Am I trusted to make solid decisions? Am I trusted to make solid judgment calls? And or am I being micromanaged where my leader, my manager is watching my every move? And working in that type of environment, that can be exhausting over time as well.
So Dan, as you talked about like workload, I couldn't agree more, especially during the times we currently live in, where if I think of schools in general throughout the country, my guess is 95% of them had to figure out how to do virtual learning overnight. Where when you think of like how big of an undertaking that is to all of a sudden be like, boom, now we're doing this, like the proper rollout versus how we had to do that, like totally makes sense. Like this is a huge issue, like the amount of work put on people. And you talk a little bit in the book then about like how we can view that work, which doesn't really take it away, but I do think it helps us at least get through it. So could you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we're addressing workload is really kind of difficult for a public educator because there are certain mandates that we have to meet, whether that's locally within our district, whether that's regionally, whether that's within the state, whether that's federally. There are different mandates that we are going to have to meet. And there's no getting away from that. But here's the thing. How we view those situations, how we view our work is 100% within our control. So there's a great study by Amy Rosinski that she looked at different workers and how and surveyed and studied how they viewed their work. And what she came up with within that research was really three categories of how these workers viewed what they did. And she called them job, a career, or calling. So those with a job, they are working to get paid, all right? They're working their 9 to 5 or whatever their 40 hours a week are to get their paycheck so they can do whatever they want to do when they are away from work, okay? Obviously, someone working with that type of mindset, labeling things as a job, is not going to be nearly as engaged as someone else. The second line or second category would be a career. Now, these people definitely interested in getting paid, but they're looking more at a career advancement. What's the next step? So if I'm a teacher, yeah, teaching's okay, but I really want to be an instructional coach. Yeah, I'm an instructional coach. I really want to be a principal. I'm a principal. Yeah, I really want to move up and be a superintendent. Okay. Definitely focused and engaged within their work, but more focused on what's the next thing. Then the third category was a calling. You see, I'm called to do this. This is what I'm supposed to be doing, all right? Yes, I'm working to get paid to support my family. Yes, maybe I want to advance within my career as well, but this is the work that I'm destined to do. I truly am making a difference, all right? So you can see, as you go down, job, career, calling, your level of engagement as you move up those different categories is going to go up with each. And if we're seeing our work as a calling, truly, you can get through these 20 months. You can get through these 22 months and deal with the some of the nonsense that we're having to deal with or some of the really big challenges that we're having to deal with. If you see that bigger purpose of, I'm called to do this. I am called to serve students. I am called to serve my community. Keeping that purpose in mind is, it doesn't change the workload. It changes how I view it, which makes it much more tolerable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it changes our perspective. So like, if I know this is something I'm called to do, this is my why, this is my purpose, like I can endure a lot of sucky stuff to achieve that, to keep doing that.
Well, it's where, the whole idea of we can do hard things.
Correct.
You know, I think about kind of what you were saying before too, virtual learning, everything. We have so many educators that are doing multiple jobs. They're doing online teaching, but they're still teaching in the classroom and they're still working with those kids virtually. So it is that whole idea of being able to do hard things, that it is our calling, that even though things are difficult, it's still what we were meant to do. It's still what we have the passion for and why we do what we do.
And I would think if you kind of approach it from the job perspective, like maybe not, but if someone's just there for the job, there for the paycheck, that once you're burnt out, it's almost like it's time to find something easier, less stressful, where you make the same amount of money. Where it's like, I'm going to go, I guess essentially, like if I'm thinking of someone who's job focused, it's I'm going to go where there's the least amount of stress, but still I can get what I need as far as a paycheck.
Absolutely. And if you're living in the educational world right now and you are associating with that job orientation, you're going to be struggling big time right now. Mm-hmm. We have to continue to see that greater purpose and be looking in that in the mirror every single day, because times are difficult. Let's be just completely honest with that. If we said they weren't, we were just flat out lying. It's tough.
Yeah, if we're relying on the paycheck alone in education right now in 2020, 2021, it's not worth it.
No.
You need that why, that calling. As educators, I do feel most of us are seeing this as a calling, not simply a job. One of the things that comes with that is we're very passionate about what we do and what we want our students to be able to achieve. So it's really easy to say yes to everything and just keep going and going and going and adding more and more to our plates. And that's something you kind of talked about within the book as well, Dan, the saying no with skill, or, you know, making sure if you are saying yes or something that it's something that truly matters. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing to think about is not all tasks are created equal. And I think sometimes by default, if we are not intentional about that, all of these tasks that come our way, whether you're an instructional coach, whether you're a principal, whether you're a teacher, a paraprofessional, whatever role you happen to play within the educational field, not all tasks are created equal. And here's what I like to think about. When you are able to say no with skill, it is very empowering, it is freeing, it is a wonderful thing. Because when I'm saying no to something that doesn't matter, guess what? I'm saying yes to something that does. Conversely, just on the opposite end, when I'm saying yes to something that doesn't matter, I'm saying no to something that does. And when you frame it that way and you start thinking about that, and you get really clear, and I know we'll talk about this later on, you get really clear with your values and what you stand for, what you believe in, what you hold dear in your heart, you know what's better to say no to, what's better to say yes to. And I am a pleaser, all right? I am someone who likes to help other people. That is something that fills my bucket. However, over the years, I've learned that I cannot continue to say yes, because then I start overextending myself and I cannot meet the commitments that I've told people I would. And then that just builds resentment, that you're losing trust, all of those types of things. So I've learned over time that when a decision comes my way, first off, I have to ask the question, is this something that I can say no to? Because there's a lot of times we can't say no.
Yep.
Superintendent Rick Colbert says something to me, I am going to say yes to that 99 times out of 100, right? Because he's my boss and I want to honor that and do what I need to do to serve our district, right? However, if there's something that I can say no to, it doesn't fit my values, something that I'm really not passionate about, that's a no. That's going to be a no. And it's, you know, not just something, nope, and then we're done and we move on. I might say something along the line, no, that doesn't fit my direction right now, I'm sorry. Can you check back with me in 3 months, 6 months, something like that?
I even think giving yourself permission to tell yourself yes or no. So as like a classroom teacher, where it's like in the world of social media, you're seeing what everyone's doing. You're seeing pictures of their class, everyone else's classrooms, and people are posting this and that, and it's like how easy it can be like, well, I got to do all of that. Where it's like stopping and asking yourself, like, is this something I could do? Yes, I could do this, but is it something I should do? And give yourself permission to be like,
yeah, that's cool that that person does that and has their classroom set up that way or does this during their reading group time. But like for me right now, it's not something I'm taking on, and don't feel bad about that. I feel there's a lot of like that self-guilt where it's like you see what other people are doing and you beat yourself up a little bit because you're not willing to tell yourself, hey, no, I'm not going to do that right now. I'm okay with doing what I'm doing because it's fitting my calling still.
I feel like you're speaking to me as a first-year administrator, because I think for me right now, it is figuring out, it's the balance of work, home, social life outside of school. So it is figuring out, what do I want to say yes to and what do I need to say no to? Because I'm so much like you, Dan, where I am that pleaser. And I think before taking on this role, I was busy and, you know, my nights were busy and I was coaching volleyball and I was doing all of these things that I loved to do, but now realizing that they're not helping me. So by saying yes to some of those things, it's exactly what you said. I'm saying no to some pretty important things that I shouldn't be saying no to. And so for a first-year administrator, this part of the book, like talking about that yes versus no, and kind of going into that next part too a little bit, the urgent versus important, like this is a skill that I need to continue to work on so that I can find that balance, or that I'm not putting too much on my plate, but I'm putting the important things on my plate.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that we need to think about for all people, there are 24 hours in a day. That is a level playing field for everybody. As much as we want more time, there are 24 hours in a day. We're going to be at our job 8 to 10 hours a day, sometimes more, whatever. But like for the most part, we're going to be working those number of hours per day. That's pretty well fixed. How we're choosing to use that time is within our control, much more than we think. And saying yes, saying no to those things that matter, that's a difference maker. And I think part of that is getting into, I mentioned earlier, not all tasks are created equal. And as a principal for sure, and I'm sure as an instructional coach, and even as a teacher, all of these tasks coming your way, they might appear to be urgent. Okay, that they're just, I need an answer and I need an answer right now. And that might be the case, but are they important? And so I think about, you know, the classic Eisenhower matrix, where like the urgent and important items are in that top quadrant. Those are the things you're going to want to tackle right now on your list. Urgent and important, okay? The next thing you'd want to tackle are those urgent items. You're going to want to get those knocked off your list. But also in that quadrant are things that are, they're important, but they're not urgent, okay? So thinking about something 3 months down the line, I still want to be giving that some thought. I want to be giving that some time, but I don't need to tackle it right now. And then the other thing in that quadrant might be tasks that are not important and they're not urgent. Get them off your list. If you're doing things that are not important and they're not urgent, why? Why are you doing that? And you really have to audit yourself and audit your decision making and think about that of like, man, what can be delegated and flat out, what can be thrown out? Because I'll tell you this, there are people around you who are absolutely outstanding. We work in a field where we are surrounded by amazing people who can do amazing work. What I think about this with those important, not important, urgent tasks, that matrix that I'm speaking of, when I'm not delegating a task to someone else, I am robbing them of a leadership opportunity. 100%. There are many times where I work with Greg pretty closely. If I do something that Greg could do that I could give to him, if I take it myself and I do not let him do that, I am robbing him of an opportunity to lead. And I think we need to think about that with all of these tasks and things that we have. But not all of those tasks are created equally.
When I think of like the whole urgent versus important part of the book here, couldn't help but think of like how many things that are important end up as important, urgent, simply because I didn't take action on them. And I think back to like my time as a special ed teacher. I remember I had a calendar or like a week schedule, and it had every free opportunity I had. Like, here's my my prep, here's my 15 minutes before school, and here's my 30 minutes after school. And then in that, I have written down, like, this is the time this week I'm planning the next 3 days of this group. And, like, each thing had its own place where it's like, I know I'm going to do that. And even as a human being, I think as a family, a big family, like, we have tons of laundry. Laundry is important. It's not an urgent thing until you wake up and it's like, oh, I showered and I don't have any underwear. Now we're urgent. Now we have an issue. But if I'm tackling this along the way, before it becomes an urgent, important thing, I'm going to put myself in a much better place where I'm not feeling that overwhelming feeling of, oh my gosh, I have so much stuff to do. Because everything has a time to be done.
So much of it is being proactive, as you mentioned, and you don't want to get those tasks that are being neglected and all of a sudden they are becoming urgent where you're getting out of the shower and you don't have any underwear because you neglected to do the laundry, right? We want to stay active with those important tasks and be building. And we talk about one of the positive psychology principles is the Zorro circles, creating those small wins to build the bigger wins. Take care of a little bit today, not taking on the whole task all at once, but little by little by little, but not losing sight of that. Because, yeah, you do not want to get into that urgent state because ultimately the product suffers too.
And even, I mean, I don't know if it fits here, but I know we've talked, Dan, about like scheduling out tasks where at the beginning of the year I had a bunch of data stuff that I had to get entered into some reporting systems. And I was really struggling to do it because I was trying to do it like 5 minutes here and there. And it just came down to, it's like, I'm just going to, a couple weeks in advance, schedule a morning and I'm just going to shut my door. I'm going to tackle this. I put it on my calendar. And I took something that was important. I gave it a time to do it and I tackled it, where if I wouldn't have done it and it's the time it is now, that would have been an urgent thing that was also important, because now we're coming up onto our next benchmarking period where it's like, we can't even enter this stuff because we don't have last stuff's entered yet. Would have been in a mess.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think I use this to reflect on things even, you know, again, I go back to the new principal role and figuring out, like, what systems do we have in place that we need to look at? What systems do we have in place that maybe are urgent that we need to make changes to for safety or for just having the building run more smoothly? But, you know, I started a list of systems to talk about or work through that are important. So things that are like, you know what, this would be something really good that we need to talk about, but we don't need to talk about it right now. So I think, too, that whole urgent versus important and not losing sight of those things that are important, but like you said too, I think when you get to the point that they become urgent and then you're almost operating in maybe that like chaos mode of, then everything starts to pile up, and then that's, again, you go back to where that burnout, because you feel like you're not being effective at your job, you feel like you don't know which direction to go to, and then you just almost freeze or feel paralyzed because you don't know what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about just like an analogy would be saving money for college. Like, your kids are going to be going to college, whatnot, and you have this idea that, yeah, I want to have a certain amount of money to help my children when they go to college. But you know what? That's very important, but that's all down the line. But in the here and now, I'm not doing anything about that. I'm not saving any money. I'm blowing that on whatever else, clothing or other stuff, and I'm not addressing the importance, so to speak. Every year that goes on, that's becoming then more urgent. All of a sudden, you've got an 18-year-old kid, they're going to college, and this bank account that you set up has nothing in it because you didn't set up a proactive system to be able to do that, right? That's what I think about. We don't want to be there with our tasks. We don't want to lose sight of the important. And we do. We are going to have to tackle the urgent that comes in front of us. However, not every task is urgent, and we don't have to tackle every urgent task. We have excellent professionals around us that we can delegate. And there again, if something's not important, don't do it. Tell people no.
So kind of wrapping up with this chapter, this would be a chapter from the book. So obviously, like, workload's one of those things where it'd be really cool if there was the magic wand where it's like, boom, here's another teacher in your classroom, and you guys get to work together and do your same job, but now there's two of you. Like, that's not going to happen. But the stuff that you present in this chapter takes a very tough issue, and it puts it, or it gives us things as, like, on a personal level that we can do to shift our mindset, to shift our perspective, so that we can start tackling some of that, the ways we perceive that workload or the control and autonomy.
Absolutely. And that, you know, we've said over and over, there's so many mandates that we do have to meet, but how we're choosing to use our time, how we're choosing the decisions that we're making, and the mindset that we're showing up with daily matters. It does. And if you're viewing your work as a calling, you have some skill to say yes and no to certain things, and you're being very diligent with what's urgent, what's important, what's not urgent, etc., you're going to be in a much better position to tackle these workload dilemmas, and you're going to feel much more autonomous and, like, in control of your situation, and that matters.
All right, so we're going to wrap this episode up. Anything else, Jenny? No? All right. I am super excited for the next one, Practicing Encouragement, Recognition, and Appreciation. I'm even quoted in this chapter coming up. So if you would like to learn more about us, check out our website, www.schooltalkpodcast.com. You can find our past shows there, as well as our social media links. We would love to hear from you. As we leave, ask yourself, what one thing can I do to make me a better version of myself? Then do it, because greatness is not achieved by one event, but instead a series of small, intentional steps.
Go be awesome.